Is the extension of the tax credit for wind projects something you focused on or communicated with our congressional delegation?
I've been not only for the extension of that and focused on it and talked about it publicly and privately, but the problem is they need to do it for longer than a year at a time. I mean, obviously they need to do it to further make viable American wind energy manufacturing and proliferation of the wind energy grid in our production in the United States. But they don't need to do it a year at a time, because people that have to invest the kind of money you're talking about to build these plants or to commit to buying turbines or buying wind blades, which are really pretty high-end, very expensive items, mm-hmm. need some degree of certainty. They don't need to know whether or not they're going to have to fight every single year for a tax credit to be competitive in a new and fledgling industry. And so that's one of the tax credits that I've been talking about for several years, ever since we got in the wind energy manufacturing business, and I became more cognizant of the need for that, that they do that on a more sustained long-term basis so that business and investment can rely upon the stability of the public policy to make those kinds of pretty big investments that need to be made.
I want to ask a couple of tangents on that. First of all, the Mitsubishi plant that is announced right up in Fort Smith has been involved in some litigation.
With GE.
With GE. What's the latest on that? Are you concerned about that project ultimately coming to fruition?
Of course. Well, they spent a whole lot of money building a whole lot of buildings, so I expect that there's a lot of optimism that it will come to fruition based upon what's already been expended. But you are correct. The production is held up based upon pending litigation over technology and proprietary ownership of technology between GE and Mitsubishi. And yeah, I'm concerned about it because those people aren't employed right now in manufacturing. Obviously, the construction people are employed mm-hmm. doing the construction. But sure, it's on hold, waiting on the courts to make a decision.
Also along the wind energy lines, we've seen SWEPCO produce a settlement with some environmental groups based on the Turk plant down in Southwest Arkansas. And from that is a commitment to do some wind energy projects.
Sure.
Granted, those wind energy projects aren't in Arkansas, but what do you see as potential for Arkansas as a result of that?
I see a potential for more sales of wind energy component parts, whether it's nacelles or turbines or blades manufactured by Arkansas companies, or the other component parts that go into any of those products manufactured by Arkansas companies employing Arkansans at good paying jobs that we have been able to recruit from mostly from Europe, but ultimately if the Mitsubishi gets up and going from Asia as well. And so the benefit to Arkansas and the benefit to Arkansans centers around the fact that it's greater demand for Arkansas manufacturing products, which creates more job opportunities and longer job opportunities and enhanced job opportunities for our people.
Give me an update of where we are with Medicaid reform. You've presented a budget on Medicaid for this upcoming fiscal session,
right.
But you're also working on some reform efforts. What's the latest on that?
We're still working. We have the preliminary specifics that are being talked about and debated in various focus groups with all of the various constituencies that are most directly related involved. What I said from the beginning was we don't need to do this kind of stuff in a vacuum, and bureaucrats don't need to be making this policy, and I don't need to be making this policy without the direct input from the people actually involved, whether it's doctors, whether it's hospitals, whether it's consumer groups, advocates for doctors or for the patients, for the doctors and hospitals, whether it's the Medicaid folks themselves. And so the basic underlying core was that fee-for-service, which is the old way we've always paid for health care, is unsustainable. The costs keep going up so fast, the taxpayers don't have enough money in the world to keep paying those escalating health care costs, much less on their own policies, over and above what their taxes pay for. So trying to separate ourselves from a fee-for-service model and go to a bundled payments model without adversely impacting either accessibility or the quality of health care is a difficult and real complicated task. So we've involved all these various groups. We have 9 preliminary diagnosis areas to try this on to see if it works. There's no guarantee it'll work. We do know if we do nothing, we're going to be way in the hole in terms of money. Mm-hmm. So we got to do something. And there's no guarantee that this is the right answer. And that's why we've got all these groups involved to try to help us flesh out the details, which are very, very complex. I'm happy to report that they are working hard, that some of the people that were initially against even the concept have dug in, and they're working side by side with other providers, with insurance companies, with doctors, with hospitals, with our Medicaid folks, our human service folks, and with some legislators. They all seem to be trying to work together to make this work. We'll see.
So you're telling me they're all singing
Kumbaya? No, I'm not saying they're all singing Kumbaya. There's still resistance in some circles. There's still skepticism in some circles. But to my knowledge, the initial resistance to even sit at the table and try to figure it out is gone.
Okay.
And if there's a constituency group out there that's unrepresented at the table, I'm not aware of it.
Let's talk about the fiscal session next week. You've made some budget cuts. You've outlined some supplemental appropriations. You've presented a budget. A few items are not in there. You have not addressed in your supplemental appropriations the trial court assistance funding situation. And
you mean for temporary relief?
For temporary relief.
Because you know that's one-time money when you talk about
Correct.
Supplemental
right.
or other one-time money.
There's nothing in there in terms of one-time money to restore some of the cuts that are being made over at the health department for their home care program. Are you going to try to address those through the budget process going forward, or are you going to live with the cuts that are there in place now?
Well, I'm always amenable to plugging a temporary hole with one-time money if we have it. But that is a temporary and fatal solution if you don't have the long-term, ongoing strategy to pick up the slack once the one-time money's gone. For example, if you've got a savings account and you need to spend $1,000 on an ongoing obligation to get you through a bad period, that's okay as long as you know that there is a constant flow of income and money so that you can sustain that obligation after that short period is finished and after that one-time $1,000 was used up. If you don't have the ongoing solution, then you're just throwing one-time money at something that's inevitably you're going to turn around and stop at the end of when that money runs out. So that's a long way of saying that I'm amenable to using that, yes, if we can work out a long-term solution. With regard to the court system issue, I have an idea of how to solve that with some one-time money in the back of my mind once I'm satisfied that they've got a long-term solution to their problem. And until we get that, we're withholding any further judgment on it at this juncture.
What's going to be the toughest supplemental appropriation for you to win legislative approval on?
Well, the one that's generated the most controversy is the Forestry Commission supplemental. But, you know, I don't think that's going to be – I mean, the consequences of not doing that is that instead of the folks that are already fired, you're going to end up with a lot more folks fired. So, I mean, that seems to me to be nobody wants to fire people if you don't have to. You got to live within your means, but you want to minimize as much as you can the effect of those fires.